There's the verse we're doing today. It's the 9th chapter, verse 22. Did I find it? Gosh. Chapter Daniel, chapter 22. French is okay. Different books have different numbers. Depends on the book size. You have different pages depend on the book size. We lock the museum. I'll do it after. Okay. Everyone on 922? So first we typically, I'm a little backwards, but first we ask for blessings, and I'll just recite a prayer that many of you know. Om Agne Tirmandasya Kiranjana Tsalakaya Chakshuru Limitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Nama Panchakalpa Tirubhyasya Kripa Sindhu Vyevacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha. And that's just to ask for blessings and not to make mistakes type of thing. And the verse, I'm going to say it in Sanskrit. I'll attempt, and then I'll say it three times, and then I'll ask for people to follow. So, Ananyas chintayanto mam yeyana paruyu pashate tesham nitya biyutanam yoga shenam vaham yaham. Ananyas chintayanto mam ye. Yes, sorry, excuse me. Ananyas chintayanto mam. Ye jana pariyushapate. Can you say that again? I'm correcting myself with you, thank you. Tesham nitya biyuktanam. Yoga shenam baham yaham. Ananyas chintayato mam. Ye jana pariyupashate. Pariyupashate, excuse me. Tesham nitya bhiyuktanam. Yoga shenam yaham yaham. Baham yaham. Ananyas chintayanto mam. Ye jana pariyupashate. Tesham nitya biyuktanam. Yoga shenam vaham yaham. Nanyas chintayantum nam. Ye jana pariyupasate. Tesham nitya biyuktanam. Yoga shinam baham yaham. Ananyas chintayanto mam. Ye jana pariyupasate. Tesham nitya biyuktanam. Yoga shinam baham yaham. Ananyas chintayanto mam. Ye jana pariyupasate. Tesham nitya biyuktanam. Yoga shenam baham yaham. Anyone else like to try? Would you like to try? Okay. So now I'll read the word for word translation. Ananya, having no other object. Chinchayanta, concentrating. Mam, on me. Ye, yeah. Those who. Jana, persons. Paryupashate, paryupashate. Properly worshipping. Tesham, of them. Nitya, always. Abhiyuktanam, fixed in devotion. Yoga, requirements. Shemam, protection. Vahami, carry. Aham, I. So the translation is, but those who always worship me with exclusive devotion, meditating on my transcendental form, to them I carry what they lack, and I preserve what they have. And this is the purport by His Grace Srila Prabhupada. One who is unable to live for a moment without Krishna consciousness cannot but think of Krishna 24 hours a day, being engaged in devotional service by hearing, chanting, remembering, offering prayers, worshipping, serving the lotus feet of the Lord, rendering other services, cultivating friendship, and surrendering fully to the Lord. Such activities are all auspicious and full of spiritual potencies, which make the devotee perfect in self-realization, so that his only desire is to achieve the association of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Such a devotee undoubtedly approaches the Lord without difficulty. This is called yoga. By the mercy of the Lord, such a devotee never comes back to this material condition of life. Shema refers to the merciful protection of the Lord. The Lord helps the devotee to achieve Krishna consciousness by yoga, and when he becomes fully Krishna conscious, the Lord protects him from falling down to a miserable condition in life. So I prepared a few points from this verse. As we can see, Srila Prabhupada's talking about two concepts in relation to Krishna, to God. And one of them is that one must be a devotee to approach him, and the process that one undergoes to go back to the Lord is called yoga. And obviously we understand that's a different kind of yoga than the popular conception of yoga. And that the Lord is all-merciful. So there's kind of three points, obviously more, within this short purport. But the one that I chose to focus on was Krishna's mercy and protection. Because that's always our favorite as devotees to think about. So this chapter 9 is called The Most Confidential Knowledge. And maybe someone did a little bit of a review before. In the past days, I should probably come to Bhagavad Gita class more. Then I'll know what people are doing. But I haven't, so excuse me. So the 9th chapter speaks about basically who is Krishna and his relationship with... I mean, throughout the Gita, Krishna's going back and forth telling Arjuna, his best friend, who he is. And what is their relationship eternally and even within the life that they're living just then. So the 9th chapter talks about Krishna's greatness, that Krishna is everywhere, that he's always... some of the examples, if you see just on the 2 verses before, or the 19, text 19, Krishna is saying that, I give heat, I withhold and send forth the rain, I'm immortality, I'm also death personified. Both spirit and matter are in me. So he's kind of just telling Arjuna that you can't understand me in many respects, because I am everything, I am everywhere, and I'm also Krishna, I am also a person standing here before you. So, as I said, the verse is speaking about Krishna's mercy and protection over the devotees. Another point is three points that I found were Krishna's subjectivity and relationship with individual souls that we'll come to, and that Krishna actually, as we will see, gives us our material desires, even though we may think he doesn't. Some of us might have heard in many lectures or in class that Krishna doesn't give us what we want. He gives us what we need. But I have an exercise, and maybe we can see if actually sometimes he actually gives us what we want also at the same time, which is kind of funny to think about. So one of the words that are interesting in this verse is he says that I carry what they lack and I preserve what they have. So we see that God, that Krishna is kind of encompassing every aspect of our protection. We're keeping what we have, whatever pious credits we have, whatever personality we have, whatever things that are good about us, we keep. He doesn't change anything about us. But anything we're missing, which typically is quite a bit if we're in the material world, if we're here, we're quite missing a lot. When we surrender to him, he gives us everything that we're lacking, everything that we're missing to become, you know, perfect and complete. And everything that we're missing to become perfect and complete, he gives us, and at the same time, he is. It's kind of a dual, it's kind of a perplex situation. But he's doing both at the same time. So a story that I think is nicely shows this concept of Krishna's mercy. It's called The King's Thumb. You know this story? I think it's my husband's favorite story. That's why I know it. I suppose it's a old anecdote of Hindu traditions, and I believe this comes from Srila Prabhupada. I don't know which book it's in, so I'll just read it as a story. So the king's thumb goes, there was a king once who, I mean, if you can imagine, kings don't typically do much physical labor, to say. They fight, maybe, and things. But so there was a king once who was cutting himself an apple, and he cut off his thumb. And, I mean, obviously this is a predicament for a king who needs to be, probably needs his thumb. So he calls one of his ministers or one of his closest men, who are his personal men, and he asks him, why would such a thing happen to me? You know, I rule the whole world, I'm taking care of so many things, and, you know, why would my thumb, why would this be beneficial to me for my thumb to be cut off? And the king, the minister says, it's God's mercy. It's Vishnu's mercy, let's say. And the king obviously gets very angry, and he sends the minister to jail, because that's not what he wanted to hear, which kings can also do. Do what they like. So the next day or so, he's going hunting in the forest, and he gets caught by some Durga worshippers. And maybe you know a little bit about Durga worshippers. They're kind of, I would assume, what most people would depict Hindus as. They do still do sacrifices. I mean, they're quite grotesque things they do. I mean, for purpose, but it's a little strange. They do animal sacrifices and things. So some Durga worshippers wanted to sacrifice him. So as they're trying to prepare the sacrifice and things, they're getting him ready, they find that he has no thumb. And typically in any tradition, you have to sacrifice something that's pure, and something without a thumb is no longer pure. I've seen this in some movies also. They use the same concept, because the purity is one of the requirements. So then it turns out, okay, well, he can't... he can't become sacrificed. I mean, they have to release him. What else can they do with him? They don't want to kill him. They're not murderers. They were just trying to do a sacrifice. So they let him go. So he goes back to the jail and tells his minister, you know, how sorry he was and how he was right, and, you know, just begging him for an apology. He's giving him an apology. And the minister says also, well, I think it was also God's. I definitely think it was God's mercy that you cut off your thumb, and I think it was God's mercy that you put me in jail. Because if I had all my fingers and I was with you, then I probably would have been the one getting sacrificed. So it's interesting, if you look at the complexities, if we see this kind of a, it's a little bit of a silly story, but if we see this silly story and apply to our own life, the way that we may not always think things are going as we'd like, and we may not always see the plan, the bigger plan, the bigger purpose, but there often is, I mean, there always is, but we're not always able to see it. Maybe not even in this life are we able to see it. But this story kind of gives that not only was his thumb saved his life, but also saved his friend, the reaction of it. And it wouldn't seem fair that he would go to jail the same way, but it actually worked out in both of their benefit. So I also found, so that's one nice story to show the way that God protects or gives mercy if we're able to see it. And another, I mean, obviously, if we were given an assignment to look at all the ways that Krishna particularly was merciful to his devotees, it'd be a really long assignment, because if we look at the Bhagavad Gita itself as part of the Mahabharata. I just finished reading the Mahabharata again. Love it. And I wish it was a movie that I could watch every day or something. I mean, it's better reading, actually. It's not as good as in a movie. So in the Mahabharata, which this book takes part of, it's a huge book, Krishna is here depicted as the charioteer of the chariot driver of his best friend Arjuna. And I always found it, I was always kind of perplexed why. I mean, I couldn't understand why Krishna chose Arjuna as his best friend type of thing. I mean, there's whole complex stories associated to everything. But basically, Krishna's best friends were the Pandavas, were Arjuna and his four brothers and their family. And because this was his best friend, and because Arjuna was a best friend, he was not envious. As described in the first chapters of the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna tells, you know, what kind of person can be my devotee? And one of the first qualities is no envy towards him as God, which is a serious consideration. And if you're a friend, if you become the devotee, you worship him in any form, then he takes care of you 10 times, 1,000 times over, more than you are giving to him. So, for example, the pastimes of Arjuna and Krishna, and there's so many. But I found I was counting during the war how many times Krishna had to save Arjuna, and I was just laughing because Arjuna, no offense, he's a pure devotee. I can't compare, but he was really silly in many regards. During the war, there were instances where it was just obviously, you know, he was going to die, and he needed to stay alive because the point was that his family would take over the dynasty and assert righteousness, because the world had become quite full of many evil-minded kings, including, you know, they're his own brothers, but etc. So there was a pure reason for Arjuna to live and his brothers to live, and still many instances during the war he obviously was going to die and Krishna had to save him like a child. One of the instances that we know about that is famous is when Bhishma, that's their grandfather who nobody wanted to kill, he has to kill his own grandfather. Bhishma was ready to kill everyone. He said he would kill, I mean, of course, not Krishna, but he was ready to kill everyone. He said, yes, this is my duty, I've surrendered. You know, this is the end of my life. I'm willing to take it. So he's going to kill Arjuna. And Arjuna's faltering, like, I can't kill my grandfather and all these things. And Krishna had made a promise in front of everyone. And maybe not as much as it is important nowadays, which is still, it's important to hold your word in society today to an extent. It was very important in this time period. I mean, it was a different time period to keep to your word. And Krishna had said, I will not fight. I will not take up arms and fight. And then his friend is like being really silly and he has to protect him. So he goes and takes, I mean, Bhishma has like millions of undying arrows and everything, and Krishna takes up a chariot wheel, I mean, in front of everyone. I mean, everyone can see that he's breaking his promise, and that would make him a liar. And he has no problem to become a liar to save his friend. I mean, it doesn't seem like... I don't think it seems so important to us because we often lie, so it doesn't seem like a big deal to us nowadays, but actually it was a very big... It's a sin in the material sense. It was a sin to break his promise. But he did it to save his friend who was completely going to die. And he took up a chariot wheel against his own... You know, this is his other pure devotee to save the one that needed to live. For example, I mean, there's endless... I mean, I think I counted five... If I'm mistaken, five times Krishna had to break his promises to save his friends. I mean, it was kind of ridiculous how many times he had to do it. So Krishna is really, I mean, fun also, but he really, really goes the extra mile. He's like our best friend we never knew we had. And I think... I'm finding more and more and more I'm going into studying that the stories give us so many accounts that are relatable to us in different ways, if we look at it, of how Krishna will save us, not necessarily from death, because death isn't necessarily our biggest enemy, but save us from our own enemies, which in many senses are ourselves, our own mistaken qualities and things. Okay, so that was the concept of mercy and protection. And then the other concept that I found really interesting is that Krishna is kind of making up our bank balance. He's like, okay, you have this much in your account, you keep that, and if you need any more, I'll just put it in. You know, like a sincere parent, not a strange parent who wants you to, I mean, a parent who cares about you. It's like, if you need something, I'll take care of you, but not the one who puts $1,000 in your account every month and you waste it on who knows what. I mean, it's like a careful friend, somebody who really cares. And in this way, I was saying before that we get to have our own individual relationship with him. He's not just in order supplier, is what we call it, you know, the concept of maybe some other concepts of God. Is that you want something and he gives it to you? No, he gives you what you lack. It means what you need. It means what you need to continue, not just anything you desire. And in that same way, then you can have your own personality as well, because he doesn't make you change and form you into anything else than what you already are, because that's what he wants with you. He wants to have a personal, individual relationship. We often hear also the analogy of the bhakti bank. We learn in bhakti sashri. I use my bhakti sashri notes when I prepare class, so a lot of it comes up. The bhakti bank is one nice way to look at it. So we all have bank accounts, probably. And the way they work is, if you have money, you get to spend, and if you don't, it goes in negative, and eventually they will charge you for being in negative. That's how it works. So, but with Krishna's bank account, we have whatever money we put in, and money for Krishna is pious credits. It's devotion. It's service. It's service to our devotional service is a broad genre of things. It can be service to specifically to devotees, specifically to our family. I mean, it's this concept of giving selflessly, and whatever we give, it gets stored in a bank, and it never goes minus. No matter what negative, sinful things we do, it never goes minus. It just stays, and it continues with us life after life. So it's a really good bank account, and it doesn't exist in this world, this type of bank. And when we finally get to the point where we're not doing so much negative anymore, I mean, we're actually able to have a relationship with Krishna. I mean, it takes some time to get to that level. So many lifetimes, maybe, dependent on our own path. So, I found these points interesting. I wanted to make some of the questions that arise when reading, actually scripture in general. I'm going to ask the audience so they stay awake. Okay, so if you read the Vedanta Sutra, which you will read in the college, if you go to the college. Anyways, there's four main sutras. And anyways, this sutra has kind of, this is a gist of it. I think it's a summary. It says, the Lord neither hates nor likes anyone, though he appears to. Now, we were just speaking about the concept that Krishna is very subjective. I mean, he completely gives everything to his devotees. He's willing to kill someone else for his devotee. I mean, he does whatever is necessary. He doesn't care. He does he has his own morality system. As God, I think he's granted to do so. But he has his own system. So we're seeing contradictory things. We're seeing that Krishna takes care of his devotees completely and does everything for them. Yet in the Vedanta Sutra, which is the Bhagavatam is coming, the Srimad Bhagavatam is coming from, it says that the Lord neither hates nor likes anyone, though he appears to. Would anyone like to refute this comment or explain this comment nicely? Did you hear the question? Rami, do you have a idea? So we have two sides. We have one side that Krishna completely subjective, and the other side that scripture says that God is not partial to anyone. How do we understand this? Mark Prabhu? A really good point. One really good point Mark just made was that whatever Krishna's doing, it's actually for everyone's benefit. Now you can look at specific stories, like he's saying when he's killing everyone in the Kurukshetra war. I mean, they kill everyone. I mean, they're in the middle. I mean, I can't imagine that anyone was left in the earth. I thought after this war and the smell. I mean, anyways. I mean, they killed millions and millions of people. Maybe 6 million, I think it was, or something. That seems like a grotesque amount of people for one purpose. But Krishna is killing everyone on behalf of the Pandavas, actually. I mean, he helped kill many of them. And the reason he's doing it is actually benefiting everyone. And what I thought was nice in just connected to that, in the end of the Mahabharata, Yudhisthira tells... who does he tell? He tells someone that actually I went to heaven and I saw them. Dhritarashtra. Dhritarashtra is kind of like us, I think, like really slow and very confused. He just doesn't get it. And he's continuously like crying, and then someone tells him something and he's like, oh, I get it. And then he's crying again. And anyways, so Yudhisthira tells him. Yudhisthira is Arjuna's friend, one of Krishna's close friends. Tells his uncle, who caused the war in many respects, like, I went to heaven. Actually, I got some kind of boon, I think it was, to go to heaven. And I saw all the people there. They're all okay. Don't worry about them, you know. Don't worry about your 100 sons. I saw them in heaven. Krishna killed them, and then they went to heaven. Don't worry about it. Which was really interesting, because even in that time period, people were very skeptical even. I mean, to believe that faith was still hard to find even then. During Krishna's time, so what to speak of now? It'd be hard for us to believe that actually, when something bad is happening in the name of Krishna consciousness, or something's happening, that it's actually for the benefit of everyone. It's hard to be. We're skeptical. That's why I bring up this point, because it exists. But he's saying that it's for every Krishna. What Krishna does actually is for everyone, but we just aren't able to see it many times. That's the point. Anyone else has another point? Why? How do we understand Krishna is subjective and God should be not partial?
Thank you.
Yeah, we see, I mean, what he just is saying is that even in this world we see that partiality exists. It doesn't, I mean, I had a degree before this in journalism, and they used to say objectivity. You know, it was like truth is the, what is our ISKCON motto? Like truth is the, purity is the force, truth is the, books are the basis, this kind of motto we have. In journalism, it's like objectivity is it equals everything, and it's a complete joke. It doesn't exist, and we find even with God, of course, partiality, in some extent, it exists. But what he was saying is that even for a mother, you know, who loves all her children, of course, I mean, she had them all equally, 9 months, everything equally. Maybe some gave her more trouble than that, but she may be favorable towards one that is more obedient, such as Krishna is more favorable to his devotees that are following his desires. So this is a few ways to answer this question. It's important to think about, especially when you talk to people who've experienced suffering in their life. It's hard to understand how God can allow such things and be partial. And then another question that arose, I mean, these are just questions that came to me when I was reading this. I mean, and just one other I have. This is how I do my group interaction. So why would the Lord have to protect us from the material nature, which is, in a sense, his own product? So we're here in the material world. I don't know if I have exactly the answer for this. We're here in the material world, and we're experiencing suffering, happiness, also confusion. I mean, so many things. And this verse we're reading is about that he's basically going to protect us. He's going to take care of us if we become, if we worship him, if we become his devotee. So why does Krishna have to protect us from himself in so many extents? I mean, we understand, as devotees, we understand the philosophy that it's Yogamaya, that she's actually his devotee who has to do all the dirty work and set up this material world for us because we really wanted to be here. And I've sometimes thought, yes, actually, I did want to come here. It's come to me sometimes. I probably did want to come here. And then most of the time, not, though. So why do we have to be protected from himself? Anyone want to answer? You have something? Definitely. So he's protecting us. He has to protect us because actually we're very... we're like helpless children in many respects. And even in his product, I mean, your mom may build a pool. I mean, your father might build you a treehouse, but he has to make sure you don't fall out of the treehouse even still while you're playing in it. And so we have limited abilities, limited senses, limited foresight, limited memory, everything limited. So he protects us by giving us, when necessary, these kinds of some kind of mercy to take, to help us in these respects, to get closer to him, always to get closer to him. Anyone else have an idea? Very true. I mean, your father probably spent, you know, how many hours buying these things, building this. I don't know, you know, if they were building in Holland, these items, and so proud of his work. And then you're like a little running into everything, and he has to protect you from things that he's building for your desires. I mean, you know, he's building you a desk so that you can work and play on it, and then you hurt yourself on the desk. Unforeseen things, dangers. Yeah, very true. I mean, for Krishna, I mean, he built this material world through his external energy for us to do what we want here. And we, to many extents, do exactly what we want. The problem is it never comes out how we want it to come out, but we are doing what we want and suffering the consequences, good and bad, for them. I thought I have an exercise to finish the class, because nobody's coming to the door for me. So maybe in 5 minutes. So if everyone wants to go together, in group of two, yep, perfect. Two and two, yep. This is how I prepare classes, and I don't have to do this one. So you have a partner, and we'll just do like 2 minutes each, so it's a 4 minutes total. It's okay, it's okay? So I want you to, I mean, do it as much as you can. It doesn't have to be so in detail, because that would take probably a lifetime. But if you retrace some, you know, superficial desires, if you want, you don't have to share your deepest secrets. Before becoming a devotee, while a devotee, I mean, before becoming a devotee, like before I really decided to jump in, or maybe even now that you're becoming a devotee, or whatever path, kind of your initial stages is kind of a good point to look at, because often you come from with a lot of desires. Before you're a devotee, you kind of have a lot of desires. And then when you become a devotee, they kind of get lost a bit, found again. So it's a little easy to start with maybe when you became a devotee or when you started thinking about spirituality, this kind of thing. Do you understand the thing? So you're going to look at that point in your life, kind of, just for a second, think about it for a minute or so, and then think about what were your desires, and then look at now, and see if any of those material desires actually were fulfilled through, obviously, you can look through Krishna consciousness. I mean, some desires you can force to happen, but through actually, you know, natural means. And I mean, so some desires are ridiculous, but just look at the logical ones. I mean, I have some things I thought of. Is this make sense a bit? Yeah, I mean, ask the God, or even if it was something you were meditating on subtly, even, and somehow it became fulfilled through whatever means it happened. Does that make sense to everyone? A bit? So I'll give you a few. I mean, we have till the end of class, so we can talk, and then whoever wants to share, we can share. I have mine, kind of. We're not recording, don't worry. Woohoo, what a lucky day. Thank you. It was. It comes. It's amazing. Virginians are coming. You have to switch partners at least. Do the other one. We're doing class. After the college, you have to give class in the college. So I don't mind giving class. Not that I give anything good, but I don't mind it anymore. Oh no, my sister knew. I told her come, and she's not here. I make them do stuff, then I don't even have to do anything. That's how I do. Until I have something to, some knowledge to give, I make them figure it out themselves. I'm like that. Oh, something's so itchy. I'm allergic to some flowers. Oh gosh. This one is my favorite. You can put this in salads. It's so good. I mean, the flavor's not amazing, but it's nice, huh? I love this one. It's nice. It's falling apart a bit, though. And I got lucky. I think this is Gopinath's hair. It must be. Or it's a pujari. But whatever. Let's see. I'll know tomorrow. No. They have to talk about the material desires and how they've been fulfilled. I think they're finishing. I don't know how to break them. They're into it. Yeah, I'm like waiting because usually the people who want to watch us come.
Yeah, well, basically like me.
Yeah, without Manu and Krishnadas, they are here every day. They don't let any of us sing, though, so it's not so nice. Thanks. Then when you come back, you don't get to sing. Thanks. So kind. Best friends. So we're just about finished? Yes? It's okay? Does anyone want to share? We can share one or two. We have a bhajan, but she needs some friends, so she can wait. Oh, but there's no one here for bhajan, so it's okay. So who would like to share? Anyone? Share a story. Okay. This is your story or Rainy's story? Okay, this is his story. Sick. Oh, small miracles. It's amazing. Thank you. That's a nice story. You want to share? Please.
Then I said,
Yeah, yeah, very true. You always think you're doing it. Even if God gave you that cigarette, you thought you got it yourself. No, he surrendered there, so it was amazing, really. Anyone else wants to share? No. Yes? You get heard. But sometimes the signs aren't so clear, I tell you. If we're not able to see, but definitely. Anyone else want to share? Marcy. Okay. Well, that's my attempt for class. Thank you, everyone, for listening. I guess I'll go.
Who plays Mridanga? Both. I know. I knew the answer to that question. No? This is falling apart. Ah. We just take off all these things here.